All right, now it is time to take a look at the Lakeville Journal. This week in the Lakeville Journal, we welcome in Cynthia Hosswinder and Janet Manco. Good morning.
Good morning.
Janet?
Hello.
There she is. Okay.
I was holding my breath there for a second.
But there Janet, you turned a different color.
There was no Janet, but there was also no dial tone, so I realized we had made the correct connection.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, we open up the paper this morning, and I want to give kudos also to the Millerton News, because in the Millerton News, they have a great series of articles. There's been a lot of different meetings for police reform in New York State and local communities. And for you folks listening, there is full coverage on that, on a statewide issue as well as a local issue. So I want to give props to the Millerton News for that great story.
Yeah, thanks for that. And there are several stories on these initiatives that have to go through by April 1st. So it's a fascinating story, good one to read.
And like I said, the paper explains it on a statewide level and also on a local level, which is great. All right, now speaking about strong opinions, the housing proposal in Salisbury once again is turning into a very strong opposition and difference between the people that don't want it and want it, and supported by media campaigns that are amazing. This has really blown into a full-blown big controversy now.
We kind of thought that the Falls Village affordable proposal was fairly controversial, and it seemed like the Salisbury one might have some friction, but I certainly didn't expect it to turn into quite the Clash of the Titans that it's turning into. And in fact, we have a full-page ad this week that Janet can talk about when we get there. But
there's that. There's the full-page ad that you have. There's an incredible video Facebook campaign. I'm dumbfounded because it really shows a huge, huge rift.
And it's people that you like on both sides of it. It's not so much of a cultural gap where you feel like, well, boy, this is a symptom of how our nation is divided. It really is people who you kind of would have thought would be in alliance with each other. And very strong opinions, very legitimate arguments, I would say, on both sides. There's neither side where you feel like, oh, my gosh, that's a problem. I mean, everybody feels passionate about it, and they're backing it up with very thoughtful arguments, which is hard. It's going to be hard for them to work their way through it. And really kudos to the people who are volunteering to try and work on this proposal on the planning and zoning side, on the affordable housing committees and commissions. Really extraordinary, and makes you understand how hard it is to be a volunteer around here. There's a lot of pushback that's difficult. So Patrick Sullivan did a great job on writing about a very long, complicated hearing in which people strongly expressed opinions, including an attorney who, I think it's in our letters this week, Janet can confirm this, somebody looked his website up, which I actually went and looked it up, and the first sentence in his bio is, they call him the Giant Slayer. Yeah. So really bringing people in from high levels to litigate this.
But this is a problem that small towns are facing more and more with volunteer commissions. God bless the people, whether you agree with their political views or not, or their views, God bless them, because more and more occasions when it comes to zoning and to housing, there's big gun attorneys that come in to take on just every normal day citizens that care about their town.
And zoning is super complicated, as you and I know from sitting through a million zoning meetings. You really have to be, it's almost like Carnac the Magnificent, having to try and figure out what some of these regulations actually mean. And to have to do it as a volunteer requires a lot of time thinking, and almost every decision that you make is going to be unpopular with somebody.
I want to go on to the next story, and that is inadequate internet, the testimony in Hartford. I want to just broach this story with just the other day. We here at Robin Hood Radio had Comcast install their 1 gig internet, okay, which is as much as you can really go right now. Now, out here in the hinterlands, it doesn't quite make 1 gig. comes close. I'm absolutely amazed. It's like it operates anywhere between 930 and 1 gig, okay? But it's in blazingly fast speed. The latency is very low, and it's right about
reliable?
I've only had it in for 1 day, and it's worked perfectly so far. And it's comparably priced to their highest end tier package that they have out there now. But it's expensive. But at the same time, I have also ordered for my house, and I'm on the list for the beta test for what Elon Musk is doing with Starlink. I should be receiving that equipment within about a month and a half. It's $499 for the base equipment. Everything comes with it. The satellite dish does not have to go on the roof. It's going to go on my back porch. As long as you face straight up and you have a clear sky above you, you'll be able to get it.
It's How not, big is the dish?
The dish is, the whole thing is about 3 feet tall and about 2.5 to 3 feet wide. So I've got a space on my back porch where it can go. The great thing about this is it's not going to start off with the highest speeds which they're going to offer, which will be over 1 gig. That'll take about a year to get there. But I am doing it to see, because the monthly cost for that is only $90 a month. For the base service.
Keep reporting, because this is very confusing for most people. I think a lot, like, even, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm a super tech-savvy person, but certainly more tech-savvy than a lot of the older people in our area. But really, this is no longer a service that's required just for your teenagers to play video games. We have sometimes four or five families that are doing Zoom all at the same time, and that really need to have their children doing their schoolwork able to keep up with the other kids in the class. So this is quite a big deal. But so there's Governor Ned Lamont, when he first came into office, had one of his first promises was, we're going to get 5G for everybody in the state. And we've subsequently had tech people say, that's not really likely to happen anytime soon. But he does seem to be trying to follow up by really trying to expand internet. There was a public hearing in Hartford. Several people from the area went, including Ian Strever, the principal of Housatonic Valley Regional High School, where they certainly see the need for high-speed internet, but also Roberta Willis, who is our former state rep and has, you know, from the time she was in office, really been a very active campaigner to get better internet speed here. Early on, recognized what a big difference it would make to businesses and to families for telemed and for schoolwork, et cetera, even before the pandemic. So we'll hope that some positives come out of this, but it was interesting that Comcast, at the same time that these hearings were going on, kind of rushed out this announcement of saying, you know, we've got this high-speed internet that's now available. But even working with their PR person, I would say it wasn't completely clear when we would say, well, what do you need to get and what's it going to cost? It wasn't a simple, quick answer. So we appreciate your
It's going to cost around $300 a month if you're going to get the high-end system. But and I'm reporting back to my good friends at the Sharon Connect because they want to see how these things, and seeing I got to be a beta tester for Starlink, I can now give them what I think about Starlink as opposed to what Comcast is doing once the Starlink stuff comes in. And like I said, you don't have to put it on the roof of your house. You've got a deck out back. You can put it there. It's going to take up a 3x3 foot section, and you don't have to drill holes in the roof. We'll see what happens. And I'm going to compare the two, and whatever works out the best. You know, we have the potential of the radio station to save almost $700 a month if Starlink works properly.
That's
a lot of money. That's almost $9,000 a year.
And on the idea of saving money, one of the things that this hearing is about is also about this movement that really started here in Norfolk for towns to buy their own system and to provide internet for their town residents, which might or might not end up working out perfectly for everybody, but of course is an additional cost and requires additional volunteers who have a fairly high level of tech sophistication. Mm-hmm. So that's something else that's at issue in this.
Well, the more plans that are out there that we can see, and the areas at least now are going to have some choices out there, some choices in the course of the next 6 months. So we'll see what happens. But this is a story that I'm sure you're going to follow and write extensively on over the course of the next 6 months.
And we're very lucky to have Rob Buccino, who's actually understands what they're talking about, which is great. And has been generous enough to share his excellent writing, thinking, and reporting skills with us.
We'll go to the next story, and that is the COVID-19 variant. One of the variants, two cases were found at East Canaan last week.
Right, and they've been updating this. There was no new update before we went to press, but there were two cases that were found in East Canaan The general sense is, of course, nobody knows anything about anything really definitively, but the sense is that the vaccines will protect against the variants, and we'll hope that that's true. I haven't certainly heard any reports of a vast increase since then, but we're keeping an eye on the state as they update us.
All right, and let's go to the other side of the front page. People say no news happens in March. Towns respond to proposal from Desegregate Connecticut.
Right, and again, an affordable housing proposal, more from a statewide point of view. And the COG, of course, is our regional organization of the 21 First Selectmen. So this is definitely an issue that's impacting all of our towns. And a lot of confusion and disinformation about what exactly the state regulations are. So Patrick does a good job of explaining one new entry into our affordable housing war here.
All right. And let's go down below. And that's a great picture. By that, of the woodpecker and on the woodpecker.
I bet you're hearing a lot of them up where you are.
Oh, woodpecker and the bear is back. The bear came back. The bears are back now at Casa Miles.
Yeah.
I don't know about woodpeckers, but bears are there.
Yeah. Keep those bird feeders inside.
That's exactly right.
Great photo from Tom Brown. Their sports is continuing. Kids are wearing masks. They have to take mandatory breaks so they can catch their breath. But they're playing, which is exciting.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go inside. The Sharontown budget is ready to present to the Board of Finance. Of course, we're at that time of year where all the towns are getting set. I think Canaan did it last night, put their budgets where they can send to the Board of Finance. It's just budget time in Northwest Corner.
Right, and interesting as towns sort of navigate between whether they're presenting online, whether their town meetings are online. Sharon's mostly doing a sort of a hybrid thing where the public officials can be in the room, but everybody else who wants to attend has to be on Zoom. Those are fairly snug little meeting rooms in these town halls. So I would say most of the town's doing a pretty good job of keeping us up to date through their websites.
All right. Now, this is a story that kind of shocked me, and that is our social service director. Whenever there's long time person where there's change, it's always a little scary, and that is Sharon's social services director moving on.
Well, especially at a time when people really, really are depending on their social services director for so many things, especially and including help getting registered for their COVID vaccinations, which has been very tricky, especially for older people, and has really turned into a full-time job for a lot of these people. So Miriam Jones, who is a part-time person, was saying, you know, she's really doing a full day, 7 days a week. She had moved to town and had replaced very long-time social services person Ella Clark, who's very beloved and really knew how to work her way through a lot of red tape. Miriam stepped in, did a great job, and Deb Alexinas did a nice interview where she kind of said, you know, if you're new in town and you don't really know anybody, it's pretty easy to meet people. All you have to do is volunteer. The need for it is so great, and the gratitude and that you feel from people, the sense of being needed is incredible. But she met a nice gentleman, and he needs her too, so she's moving out of town to be with him. But she really does make a good case for it's hard to be a volunteer, but you get a lot out of it.
All right, a little story here, but it means a lot, and that is the Donald T. Warner Community Service Award is being given out to people that really have done an amazing job in our area with the Housatonic Youth Service.
Pastor, who had run the Civic Life Program and really worked with kids not just to learn basic movie-making skills, but also to learn to use their voice and to speak out for things that are important to them.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, I was involved in one of their things. They put this together, this video together in a week and a half, and it came out so professional. I was just blown away. So not only do they get to learn how to use their voice and to put their opinions across, but to put it across in a coherent way that was short and effective. They've done amazing jobs with these students in our area. I want to go on to the Kent Selectmen. This is a story we'll be talking about for a while. How to handle summer visitors to the Housatonic River.
Already a problem for Kent way before COVID, and of course for all of the towns that have access to the river, an unbelievable increase in people escaping from hot cities and coming up and not necessarily exercising the best COVID hygiene while they're here, but also generally, you know, leaving a lot of litter. There's no bathrooms at these sites. They're really not designed for people. Parking along the roads, making it hard for emergency vehicles to get through some of these tight spaces. So in towns like Falls Village, Salisbury, and Kent, already had been seeing problems of people sort of, you know, damaging the landscape, sliding down slopes, killing a lot of plants, leaving a lot of trash. One positive thing that we've seen is in North Canaan that a property that had been unsold for many, many years, the old Masonic Lodge, had been purchased and is now being used as an access point for the river. And we'll hope that that's a win-win for everybody, that it becomes a place with really good parking, that it brings people to the revitalized North Canaan downtown. But well, it'll be interesting to see how towns are able to cope with this, requiring a lot of volunteers to patrol and to clean up trash, but also to try and explain to people that this is not a really way to great to sustain our natural resources.
All right, and a little story there that you have that the Woodland right now, no plans to close. They're serving dinner right now. They've just, you know, have to shake off the loss of someone like Rob Peters and take a little while to get fully organized. But as the story points out, there is no plan to close.
Right, and they have a lot of very experienced people there who've been doing it for decades. It's really one of the more solid staff. But still, Rob was really, I think, more than people necessarily realized. He was really a big part of how that place, not only the creativity of the menu, but also the consistency of it, which, you know, whatever you ordered on Thursday, it would taste the same the next Friday or the next Saturday. It was, it's really a miracle of a restaurant. So we'll, I think we all hope and for the best for them.
Out of Cornwall, the internet survey is in. More people get worse cell phones, more complaints about cell phones than internet, but also their budget plan.
Boy, we feel badly about our internet service in towns like Salisbury, but Cornwall really is very much in the dark ages in a lot of places. And they've done surveys at the school. All the students do have access to the internet, but you know, when we're talking about, you know, one gigabyte speed, I would say there's still a lot of very slow internet in Cornwall, and we want to make sure that all of our students come to the high school with an equal playing field, and that they get out into the world, you know, with equal skills. So Gary Steinkohl has put together the Cornwall Internet Committee, and they're starting off, as one does, with a really good survey of what people have, what they need, and what they want.
All right, and you've got a nice story by Lila Hawken on the Shea Stones, which are a worldwide phenomenon now.
Right, a very interesting story, a very sad story from the beginning of the pandemic, that we had Shay Cohen, very beloved 16-year-old kid in Falls Village, parents very well known, Denise and Doug Cohen, and horrible tragic car accident. And Shay loved to collect rocks and always had them in his pockets. And so they've started, as people sometimes do, you know, people collect rocks and paint them, and these rocks are starting to travel all over the world, and people are sending photos of them in. So nice interview by Lila with the Cohn family about how they can participate in remembering Shay.
All right, I want to move on to the exciting news out of Cornwall. The exciting news, and that is, well, there's, of course, they're trying to put in a septic system for the whole town, which would be helpful, but the old Utsalu stores is going to be usable again.
That's right. And I was listening to a podcast this morning where they were saying there were more new business starts during COVID than there were after the 2008 crash. And we're really seeing that in our area. A lot of people sort of saying, you know, risk is a time of opportunity. And so this is part of the property that was purchased by an artist named, I think his name is William Betts, and big plans for it, already trying to figure out parking, working with the town and trying to figure out septic, which, you know, again, as in Millerton, the septic is a big limiter on business expansion. But three young men who have in part worked at Mohawk Ski Area really have a sense of what people want, what people are using, and what's rented there versus what people want to buy. So they're opening a ski shop just as ski season is sort of slowing down. But also they'll have biking equipment and gear. And, of course, the guy who's got the e-bike shop in Cornwall, the old Wandering Moose, the old Cadwell Corner, seems to have been doing really well and kept it going during winter. So with a little bit of enterprise, we can see that these even off-season sports can do pretty well. So fingers crossed for them.
Okay, we only have about 3 minutes left, but I want to go to the editorial page. Let the sunshine in.
Right. This is Sunshine Week, and it's a big week not only for journalism, but for the general population, because it's not just people who write and report on the news who need open information, but many more of the FOI complaints are put in by the general public so that they can gain access to all the government information they're entitled to know. So we write about that, and we write about the history of it in Connecticut, which is long and interesting, and the effects on us now. And we especially talk about the need for better internet in this area in order to have open information open to everybody. So do read that. We have people who ask us why we don't go all online with the newspapers, and we say that so much of it is the poor internet available to many of our readers, and that's why we still need to have the print paper available for them. So do give that a read. Lots of letters and good columns, and give them a read, too.
All right, and we're going to give you the last minute and a half, a minute and 45 seconds, Cynthia, to go over Compass.
Great talk by Andre Assman for the Kent House of Books. Alex Wilburn did a beautiful, thoughtful piece on it. Tim Prentice, one of the treasures of the Northwest Corner, has a show opening at the Aldrich Museum down in Ridgefield. You can read about that. Patrick Sullivan recommends his favorite streaming cop show. Somebody had said, we want more stories about streaming. So no shortage of recommendations on that. Really good macaroon recipe and so easy. I highly recommend it. For people who are interested in history, John Brown's birthplace. We all seem to know. I think most people interested in history in the Northwest Corner know John Brown was born here in Torrington. His birthplace is still a historic site there. Some information on it now available on PDF and on video. And my favorite daydream of visiting old English manors.
All right. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Right, take care. Of course, you can find the Lakeville Journal online at tricornernews.com on your newsstands, and they even offer home delivery. That is tricornernews.com on the web.